since I last joined you here on Ball About the South with C. Wood. A lot, and I mean a lot, has gone down in and around the world of sports. The NFL is on fire for what Brian Flores came out with the other day. The lawsuit against three NFL teams and the NFL itself has put a blanket. It has overshadowed anything we saw in the conference championship games and kind of put the Super Bowl, which goes down in only about 9 or 10 days, kind of put it on hold there for a little bit in most of our minds. Then when you look around the SEC, obviously the hardwood is hot because the calendar has turned to February, but this was National Signing Day just the other day. Texas A&M, a lot of good and a lot of bad coming from College Station. And then what about the Auburn Tigers? Brian Harsin, the news is not so good from the little village on the plains. And then what about the NBA? The Atlanta Hawks, after their bad start, a lot of injuries, a lot of absences due to COVID, they seem to be hitting their stride. They won 8 of their last 9 games, and in that one game that they lost, one Trae Young was not in the lineup. All of that and much more on this, the 20th episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. What's good? What's good? C. Wood back at you with another edition of Ball About the South. Ball About the South with C. Wood. It is that podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. My name is Kerry Wood. That is my full name, but call me C. Wood for short. You can find me at C. Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG. Anytime you want to come in, chop up some sports, talk some whatever you want to talk about. It doesn't matter. Long as it's light, long as it's fun, long as it's entertaining, I'm down for it. Just hit me up on, like I said, Twitter, IG, at C. Wood on Sports. Pretty easy to find. I also have a website now for this podcast. It is ballaboutsouth.com. Just a couple stories on there, but I will be doing some writing on that website as well to kind of go in conjunction with what you're hearing here on the podcast. And also you can find the podcast on there. Again, you can find the podcast just about anywhere you listen to podcasts, whether it's obviously Google, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, just about anywhere you can think of, Ball About the South is right there. And I would really appreciate it if you have not done so far. Please hit that subscribe button so that you'll know when I drop another episode and all of that. Obviously, if you're back with me after, you know, if this is your return trip for you, you must have liked what you heard. And so I really appreciate that. And I really would appreciate it if that is the case, that you tell your friends, your family, whoever, about Ball About the South. Anyway, man, obviously we have a lot to talk about. And I'm telling you, kind of putting this show together today is not the easiest thing. I'm just going to be real with you. I mean, when you're sitting there looking at trying to keep the show to a certain length and everything, and not wanting to make the show too long, obviously you kind of look at things and be like, okay, well, I can't put everything into this show. Okay, I mean, I've had some long shows on here. There's no question about that. I know that. I mean, look, I love talking sports. I could sit here and do this all day long, every day. So it's not that big a deal for me. But obviously, it may not be come across the best with people that are listening to the show. So, again, like I said, there's a lot that's going on in the sports world, and some of it's just going to have to get cut out today, unfortunately, or we're just going to have to kind of, just do some bites and, bits and bites of some of these stories that are going on. Because, man, and look, man, we are 10 days. I'm recording on Thursday evening, and that is, 10 days, 11 days, whatever, away from Super Bowl 56 in L.A., and you sit there and you look at the NFL. You sit there, what's going on in the NFL right now? Not a whole lot of talk about the Super Bowl. I mean, it just really isn't. I mean, don't get me wrong. The talk is there. Obviously, once we get closer to kickoff, once the teams actually arrive, and I'm not really sure exactly the schedule. I would assume, obviously, L.A. is already in L.A. The Rams are already there. Rams house. I mean, I guess you couldn't come up with a better hashtag on Twitter because they're playing at the house. But obviously, Cincinnati will have to get there. I guess it'll be Monday, Tuesday. I'm sure it'll be no later than Wednesday that they will be arriving out there in LA and everything. So once all of that goes down, you start seeing the reports on NFL Network and ESPN and all of that. Then, the hype is going to obviously. It's going to take over and go where it usually goes. But right now, the Brian Flores story is really taking over the NFL. And really, it's not just Brian Flores. It's just the whole thing. When you sit there and you kind of look back at everything that's going on in the NFL over the years. And, it's just not a pretty picture. I mean, it's just not a pretty picture. I'm not really going to spend a whole lot of time on the Brian Flores thing because, quite frankly, I think a lot of people are probably going to be talking about it. Obviously, with everyone's talking about it in social media and everything. So, I'm just going to throw my little two cents in on it. And then I'm just going to kind of leave it be because we know things are jacked up. We know how jacked up this system is in the NFL, and while I greatly applaud the effort by Brian Flores to do what he's trying to do, because number one, he's doing it for himself. I mean, I'm not gonna say, well, maybe I shouldn't say it like that. He's doing it obviously for himself, but he's obviously, I think, doing it for the future of people like himself that are coming into the NFL. That's why he is shedding even more light on what has been going on for far, far too long in the NFL, in the National Football League. This whole thing is just crazy. But even, even past the point of the matter where we're sitting here as African Americans and we only have one guy that looks like us that's coaching a football team, that's a head coach of a football team in the NFL. I mean, beyond all of that, this whole thing going on in Miami is just unreal. And with this dude, the owner of this football team is doing, just to think that it could cost him his entire football team. I mean, I just cannot. I mean, I just don't know where to begin on this. But I mean, it is conversation that has been, absolutely much. We've needed to have this conversation for the longest time. We will have something go on, and we'll have this conversation. We had the Kaepernick thing, and then of course we had the campaign by the NFL where we have patches on the helmets and in racism is in the end zones and all of that good stuff. I mean, we've had those talks and we've had that dialogue going on, but we really have gotten nowhere in actually getting anything done about it. And it's been time. It's past time. And, you know, again, like I said, I just don't know what else really needs to be said. Brian Flores, I mean, this whole thing, just going back and looking at his comments and looking at this lawsuit, I mean, it's enough to floor you, man. It is jaw-dropping. I mean, and then the owner, offering him $100,000 per game to lose. I mean, I just don't know what to say about it. I really don't. But, you know, again, it's nothing that we don't already know about. It's nothing surprising about this, because when you're sitting there talking about a league that had to come up with a rule, the Rooney Rule, they had to come up with the Rooney Rule just so the interview process would be fair. And we see, even with this Rooney Rule, that it's not fair. But look, I mean, again, you shouldn't need a rule to do what's just the right thing to do. No one should be left out of a process of being interviewed for a job. And, you know, I don't know, man. It's just crazy. I've never liked this Rooney Rule just for that reason, because I'm like, I mean, obviously, if you need to try to do something like this, I guess it's okay. But you shouldn't have to put a rule out there to have these organizations do the correct thing. It just shouldn't be necessary. So, and obviously, this is probably just the tip of the iceberg. We'll see if there are other coaches that join that joined Brian Flores in this matter. I am seeing something that I saw this evening about Hugh Jackson. That may be kind of tied into this Brian Flores thing. I really did not get to look at that really deeply, so I don't really want to comment on it too tough. But yeah, man, it's just crazy. So I'm hoping that this is going to be, that this is going to lead us to somewhere, to lead us to get into the bottom of this whole thing. And obviously, I'm seeing a lot of people saying that we need to boycott, as, you know, as black people, as people of color, we need to boycott the NFL. Well, I don't know if that's the answer, because, I mean, boycott watching the NFL, rather. You know, first of all, the TV contracts are already set in anyway. I mean, they're going to get their money. If we don't watch the games, they're still going to get their money. So that's kind of a moot point. But when you sit there and you look at it, you know, look a little deeper into it, man, our guys are out there. You know, I mean, we have to support them as well. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. Obviously, the way to boycott is to hit an organization in their wallet. There's no question about that. I just don't know that not watching the game is going to do a whole lot for that. Maybe not buying merchandise, you know, things of that nature. Now, that maybe not going to the games, maybe that's, you know, something you look at. But I don't know. Anyway, we'll see how all that goes. Like I said, I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Obviously, I had to touch on it a little bit. And then the thing is, you go up the road from Miami and look at Jacksonville. The Jacksonville Jaguars have made a hire. They have hired Doug Peterson, the former head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. But hold on, wait a minute. What about Byron Leftwich? What happened to that? Now, there's some, you know, talk that Byron Leftwich was not happy with the ownership there. He wanted possibly to go in another direction with the people that are actually kind of calling the shots there in Jacksonville. So maybe that's part of what happened. It was kind of looking like Byron Leftwich was going to get that job. And now it comes out that, you know, Peterson is the guy there in Jacksonville. That's just a microcosm of what we're talking about right there. I mean, it just is. I mean, if you're going to be the head coach, man, you need to have control over at least some of the things. Okay, maybe you're not GM, but you need to have a lot of input on things that the GM does. And I think that's what Byron Leftwich was searching for there. And obviously, he wasn't getting it. And the Jaguars decided to go in another direction. So, it's another season, basically, where Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy, arguably two of the top two, three, four offensive coordinators in the league, get looked over to promote them to be a head coach. I'm not really against the hire of Peterson. I don't think that's a bad hire. I mean, I think what happened in Philadelphia, I don't know if that was all Peterson's fault. I think you can look at a lot of things that happened in Philadelphia for the reason that he lost his job up there. So you pair him with a guy like Trevor Lawrence, obviously, you know, this is a guy that in a lot of ways he could be the Carson Wentz, or what Carson Wentz was with Peterson there in Philadelphia. Now, he has the measurables, obviously, the height. He can use his legs, pretty fast runner and all of that. Has good arm talent. I mean, he has everything you want in a quarterback for today. I mean, you want your quarterback to be elusive, but you also want your quarterback to be able to stand in there and be able to throw the football with accuracy. And Trevor Lawrence can do all of those things, no question. So pairing him and Doug Peterson together is not a bad thing. It's just the fact of it looked like Byron Leftwich was going to get that job. So, anyway, that is what's going on. A little bit of AFC South news to kind of add in with what's going on there in Miami. Not necessarily in Miami, because what am I talking about? Brian Flores isn't in Miami anymore. Wherever Brian Flores is. So, that news kind of, some really odd timing for that to go down in Jacksonville this week of all weeks. If we're talking about lawsuits against three NFL teams, the New York Giants, the Denver Broncos, all of that with John Elway and his staff out there in Denver, with the interview process that went down with Brian Flores. Man, just crazy stuff, man. Anyway, just wanted to touch on that because we got a lot more to talk about when it comes to the National Football League. Obviously, they played a couple of football games this past Sunday, didn't they? I think so. I'm going to try to think back to see if there were a couple of football games this past Sunday, and I'll get back at you on the other side of this break when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. Ball About the South, the 20th episode continues, and yeah, there were a couple games that went down on this past Sunday in the NFL, the conference championship games, man, and I'm going to tell you what. First of all, I'm going to, kind of just pat myself on the back a little bit. I did not get the Cincinnati Bengals correct. So, I did lose that one. But if you look back at the entire playoffs, the wild card round, I missed one game in my picks. And that was the Raiders against the Cincinnati Bengals, ironically enough. They did not come through in that game. That was the only game that I missed as far as picking the winners in the wild card weekend. And then the divisional round, I did not pick, obviously, the Cincinnati Bengals in that game either. So, the Bengals came back and bit me twice. And you would think, you know what? You would think that I would learn my lesson this past week. Well, I did not. If you listened to the show last week, you know that I picked the Kansas City Chiefs to beat the Cincinnati Bengals. And I was wrong again. So, ladies and gentlemen, the three losses, I have three losses in the 12 playoff games, all courtesy of the Cincinnati Bengals. How crazy is that? But I tell you one thing about it, though. I'm kind of proud of that record. To go 9-3 with my picks is, I think it's pretty good. Basically, missed one each week, like I say. So, again, I'm not too bad. The thing that just continues to really just eat at me a little bit, man, is that I just really feel that should be the Tennessee Titans. That should have been the Titans playing the Chiefs, and that game should not have been played in Kansas City. The game should have been played in Nissan Field in Nashville, Tennessee, and we should have seen the two-tone blue uniforms with the Tennessee Titans, and we should have seen Derrick Henry, King Derrick Henry, and Jeffrey Simmons, and A.J. Brown, and all of those dudes hoisting that trophy and getting ready to go out to L.A. for their second trip in a rematch of an earlier game on Sunday Night Football against the L.A. Rams. That's what we should be seeing in 10 days. Unfortunately, we're not. But, hey, it is what it is. And I do want to say my congratulations to Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, all of those dudes. I tell you, congratulations on getting to the Super Bowl. And, I am just, this is a crazy run by the Cincinnati Bengals, man. You just have to applaud what they have done, what they have already become in such a short time. And remember, you have to remember this, man. This is a team where they've got some major offensive line issues, and they know it. So you know where they're going in the draft and free agency. This is the same team that gave up 9 sacks to the Tennessee Titans in the divisional round. Very same team. And they're headed to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's crazy. And you sit there, you look beyond that. A lot of SEC connections going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, you look at those Bayou Bengals from LSU, Joe Burrow. You look at Ja'Marr Chase, man. And, obviously they're the most prominent figures on that football team right now. And, man, you sit there and think about it. Those two guys, well, Burrow, just in his second season, Ja'Marr Chase, a rookie. It's just ridiculous to think that this team is going to the Super Bowl. It is crazy. It really is, man. And, again, I give out my congratulations to them. They will be playing the Los Angeles Rams. Now, I did get that pick correct. Now, I will have to put this out on, I really wanted, in a way, to pick San Francisco in that game last week. But as I said on the show, I was like, look, man, I picked the Rams and Kansas City Chiefs before the season started to be the two teams, the two participants in Super Bowl 56. So, look, I had to stick with the Rams. And I didn't really feel bad about it. I was just, again, you were talking about a 49ers team that it erased a 17-0 lead there in L.A. at SoFi Stadium in Week 18 and came back to win that game. They didn't win that game. They're not even in the playoffs. They had beaten them earlier in the season. They had beaten them 6 times in a row. So I was sitting there like, man, I tell you. I mean, and then you sit there and you look at how the Rams finished their game. Even though, yes, they They finished the game against Tampa Bay with the drive to get down in scoring range. The long pass from Matthew Stafford to Cooper Kupp. They finished that game off. They did win the game, even though they gave up a 27-3 lead. But you sit there and you look at everything in between them getting that 27-3 lead and then actually winning the game. You come up with a lot of reasons to pick against them when they're talking, you know, when they're playing a team like the 49ers, a team that they really did not, in a lot of ways, kind of don't match up well against. But they put all of that to the side this past Sunday, and you have to give your props to them as well. So congrats to them. Obviously, a lot of SEC love on that end of the field as well. You're talking about Matthew Stafford, George Bulldog. You're talking about another LSU Tiger in OBJ. Just, you know, really both sides of the football. You know, you got Sony Michel on offense. You got a lot of guys on defense as well that come from the SEC. And, again, just, man, give my congrats to them as well. So let's kind of get into those games for a few minutes and talk about them and kind of give a recap. Obviously, man, the highlight of both of those games is the fact that Kansas City did their best Atlanta Falcons impression. Okay? I mean, maybe it was not as dramatic as what we saw when the Falcons blew that 28-3 lead against New England. But it was close, man. In a lot of ways, I think it's right on par with what we saw from that Atlanta team in the Super Bowl against Tom Brady. And that's something else we have not touched on as well. I will definitely touch on Tom Brady at the end of this segment, but we'll stay with the conference championship games right now. You sit there and you look at it, man. Kansas City did everything basically the Rams did last weekend, you know, minus a couple of turnovers maybe. They just decided they would leave the biggest turnover to overtime, basically. Really, you know, so that was really the biggest difference. Other than that, you're talking about a complete meltdown from what we saw from Kansas City from the first half to the second half of that game. And really, you know, we sit there and kind of look at it, probably the turning point of the game. Well, you know, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say maybe the turning point of the game was the sequence there at the end of the first half where the Chiefs run out of time. They're on the goal line and don't get a field goal try. They don't get the touchdown pass. Mahomes throws a little dunk pass out to Tyreek Hill. He's unable to get out of bounds. They don't have any timeouts. He's unable to get out of bounds. Bengals tackle him inbounds, and, of course, the clock runs out. And of course, it comes out basically there, and you can tell on the play that Mahomes' first read is to the middle of the field. And apparently, it wasn't there necessarily, but at that point, you knowing that you only had, 3-4 seconds on the clock, you got to get the ball away. You got to get it out of bounds and preserve, you know, a second or two or whatever to kick the field goal. If you kick the field goal right there, obviously, it's not going to necessarily put the game on ice or anything, but it looks a little bit different with it being, at that point, 24-10 instead of it being 21-10. So, again, that was huge. I mean, that was a huge point of the game, but I'm not going to necessarily say that it was the turning point. I think the turning point of the game was the screen pass to Samaje Perine. That's what I'm going to go with in this football game. I think that was absolutely the turning point because, you know, Cincinnati's offense looked lost for the most part. They had scored the three earlier in that quarter and everything. But for the most part, man, Cincinnati's offense looked, they did not look as sharp as we have seen them look in the past. And I don't know if they were still kind of reeling from what had happened to them in Tennessee or whatever with the 9 sacks. Obviously, Kansas City was kind of doing some things to kind of confuse Joe Burrow to a bit, I think. I think that's part of it. And Cincinnati's offense just did not look set, man. They were not doing things that I kind of expected them to do. I expected them to score some points in that game because I don't think that Kansas City has a really good defense, and they've proven that. I mean, they proved me correct on that over and over again. So, but, I was expecting to see a little bit more explosion from that offense earlier in the game, and we did not see it. But that screen pass, they caught Kansas City in the right blitz. He gets the ball out to P. Ryan. He hands it, he hauls it in from, what was it, about 40, 45 yards out down the right sideline and made it that 21-10 game at the point. To me, that changed the whole rhythm of the game. Even though, yes, Kansas City came back and they answered and went down the field and had the chance to score there at the end of the half, Cincinnati just getting on the board, to me, was the turning point. So you sit there, you're looking at it being 21-0 or 21-3 at the half instead of it being 21-10. I think that got the ball rolling. So anyway, man, again, you go back to the end of the first half. You just cannot do that if you're Patrick Mahomes. You can't make that play in that spot. And he admitted that he got greedy. He admitted that he should have thrown the ball out of bounds. And there, of course, there are some other looks to say maybe he didn't know that they did not have a timeout. I'm not really sure which one it was, but I know I heard him in the press conference after the game saying, I should have thrown the ball away. I got greedy. I think those were his exact words. Anyway, I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but you get the gist of what I'm saying. So you go to the second half, and of course everything kind of just changes, man. We've seen it happen before. We've seen it happen with this Kansas City Chiefs team. We saw it happen just a few weeks ago in the regular season meeting between these two teams. Cincinnati erased a huge lead there in that game in Cincinnati. So, and a lot of it all kind of gets back, man, to Patrick Mahomes. As good as this dude is, man, as good as he is, a lot of that I'm going to have to put on him. Because, you sit there and you look at it. They give up 27 points total in overtime. The defense does, I'm talking about. Again, there were some breakdowns. Obviously, I'm sure, you break down their film. Obviously, there's going to be some things that they could have done better. Things of that nature. But when you sit there and look at it, if you told me 27 points, because that was the score. If you remember correctly, my score that I came up with, if you remember my show from last week, the score that I came up with was 34-27 Kansas City. So if you had told me that Cincinnati was going to score 27 points, I would have told you that Kansas City was going to be heading to the Super Bowl. So, I'm not saying that they were great defensively or anything like that, but I can't put what happened in the second half on the defense. Because, because you sit there and you look at it from this angle. What's the defense going to do if your offense is keep continuously going three and out? What are they supposed to do against a guy like Joe Burrow? They threw everything they had at Joe Burrow, especially in those last couple of drives, man. They were at Joe Burrow, and this dude continued and made play after play after play. Whether it was with his feet or if it was with his arm. This dude made all of those plays. That was not bad defense that I saw from the Chiefs on Sunday. Couldn't have said that maybe against Buffalo. Last week, I thought was a good defensive effort from that Chiefs team, which, again, for me, I have to put it on Patrick Mahomes, man. You've got to be better, especially in those last couple of drives. So, you know, Cincinnati, they get the one touchdown to get it to 21-16. They go for two. They make it 21-18. Or did they get the field goal? They got the field goal first to make it 21-13. I forgot about that. So they get then they get the touchdown, get the two-point conversion. They tie it up at 21. And, of course, they get the late drive to take the 24-21 lead. And, of course, as we have been accustomed to in these playoffs, the opposing quarterbacks, which in this case was Patrick Mahomes, he comes down and they're able to get the tying field goal to send it to overtime. But that's what I want to go back to as well, talking about the last couple of drives by Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that should have been, or at least could have been, a touchdown drive and a game-winning touchdown drive by Kansas City. But we saw again where, you know, Patrick Mahomes played like trash. Let's just be real about it. When compared to what he should be and compared to what we expect of him, and especially what you expect of a quarterback of his magnitude, of his talent, in a big game like that. Normally, I don't say that people play, you know, players play like trash or anything like that. But when you put all of those things into perspective, Patrick Mahomes played like trash there at the end of the fourth quarter and in the overtime. It all comes down to just trying to do a little bit too much. Look, Cincinnati, the way they were defending Kansas City, they were not giving up anything deep, which I think has been the way to play this team. They had, always kind of keeping a single high safety to make sure the guys like Tyreek Hill were not going to sit there and beat them deep. And, make Mahomes and those guys kind of dink and dunk their way downfield and basically wait on them to make a mistake. And that's basically what happened. Mahomes is just, man, he is a guy that kind of gets impatient back there. And that's what happened Sunday. He got impatient. He still got his team in position to take the lead or win the game there. And then he sat there and took one of the ugliest sacks I've ever seen, because I get, obviously we've seen sacks like that before. We see it all the time. But within that moment, the chance to go to the Super Bowl, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, there's no way. And then he fumbled the ball. I mean, they were lucky to get the ball back, period, anyway, on that third down play. But they turned what was first and goal at the 5 into a 47, 48-yard field goal attempt. There's just no excuse for that. There's no excuse for that. I could kind of say it reminded me, the third down play reminded me of Tua in the national championship game against Georgia on first down, before the touchdown to Devontae Smith. That's what that play reminded me of. Tua Tagovailoa at that time was a freshman in college. Okay? Patrick Mahomes has been to two Super Bowls already and should have been in his third. That's the magnitude of the plays that he made last week. And you sit there and you kind of wonder, man. You sit there and you look at some of those really spectacular plays that he makes, but man, sometimes, man, it just does he make some of those plays a little bit harder than they really should be? I don't know. Anyway, so you get that. They get the field goal to go into overtime. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I'm like, look. And I'm going to tell you my philosophy on overtime. And a lot of people talking about overtime. First of all, the first thing I want to say is the only thing wrong with NFL overtime is that in the regular season, you can have a tie. That is the only thing wrong with NFL overtime. I don't like games to end in ties. Other than that, there's nothing that needs to be changed. I mean, so if you look at it, man, basically for me, in my thought process, Cincinnati's got all the momentum in this football game. They've got all the momentum. They are the team that has come back. Yeah, maybe they might be a little winded and everything, but to be honest with you, Kansas City's defense is the defense that's been out on the field all day. They were the defense that had been out on the field the entire second half because the offense was so anemic from Kansas City. So my thought process, and everybody's thought process is, look, we want to win the toss, get the ball so we can go down and score and get the touchdown. My thought process in that situation was, if I was Cincinnati, I wanted to lose the coin toss. And that's exactly what happened, because we saw that Patrick Mahomes was rattled. And guess what? You don't want Patrick Mahomes to sit over there on the bench and kind of just be able to kind of compose himself a little bit or anything. You want him to go right back out on the field. To me now, I mean, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's just the way I look at it. I want him to go right back on the field after he just had one of the, you know, craziest sacks that we've seen in a situation like that, where he actually fumbled the ball and all of that. Because, look, I mean, it was obvious this dude was forcing. He was forcing. He was trying to do too much. So I wanted to give him the ball back if I'm Cincinnati. And I think it worked out perfectly for them. And I predicted, man, I didn't type it out on Twitter, but I was sitting there watching the game. But I was like, man, I wouldn't be surprised this dude throws a pick. And he almost threw three. First down, almost threw a pick. Second down, the ball gets tipped or something like that. And, of course, on third down, he finally did throw the interception. Trying to do too much. And it gets you back to Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow taking what the defense gives him. Defense, if there's nothing downfield, if there's nothing first read isn't there, what have you, this dude saying, you know what, I can use my legs. I can get the first down myself. He did that, what, 3-4 times in those last couple of drives that they made? He made play after play on the road in Kansas City in front of that crowd with what everybody is saying is the best quarterback in the league right now on the other sideline. Joe Burrow made every one of those plays. I thought it was spectacular, man. I really did. I thought it was absolutely spectacular. And, again, that defense for Cincinnati, they deserve a hell of a lot of credit as well. Holding that Kansas City offense down and really, to me, getting in the head of Patrick Mahomes. That's what happened on Sunday. So my hat's off to the Cincinnati Bengals as they head to their first Super Bowl since 1988. And it was kind of starting to look like they were going to be playing their third Super Bowl. This would be their third Super Bowl appearance, and it was kind of looking like they would be playing their third appearance against the San Francisco 49ers. Would that have been crazy? Didn't quite turn out that way, as the L.A. Rams had some other ideas. We'll come back. We'll talk about that game when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're going to continue Ball About the South. We're going to look at the other game, the other conference championship game, the NFC. And this one I got correct. Like I said, the L.A. Rams were able to come back and beat the San Francisco 49ers. They were the team that got down double digits there in the, going into the fourth quarter, 17-7 in that football game on Sunday evening. But they were the ones that were able to come out. They get the field goal to make it 17-10. And then they get the ball back. You know, I think you have to give a lot of kudos to them defensively as well. They were able to, you know, really kind of hold down that 49ers run game. And then, you know, then again, you kind of sit there and think about it. The 49ers probably didn't run as often as you kind of thought that they would, which is kind of, you know, really surprising to sit there and kind of think of it that way. But they were able to, you know, whatever you want, whichever way you want to look at it, the Rams were successful in keeping their run game quiet. And that was the big key going into this game. That has been the big key in a lot of those victories by the 49ers over the Rams. It's been their running game. It's been their physicality that has been the difference. And so the Rams, you could tell, were a lot more physical on this past Sunday. They had to be if they were going to have a chance to win that game. The other thing that had to happen was, I don't know, when I sit there and continue when my thought process for the Rams quarterback, I don't know why I continue to sit here and go think about Sam Bradford. I don't know why his name continues to pop up in my head. I'm not really understanding that. I have no clue. Matthew Stafford. The key for Stafford in this game was just pretty much the same as we talked about with quarterbacks like Ryan Tannehill. And, of course, on the other sideline in this game, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy G, is just to not make a mistake, man. Obviously, you're not going to play a perfect game. You just don't want to make the big, huge mistake that's going to cost your team the football game. And Matthew Stafford never did, and he never did in either of the games here in the playoffs so far. So you have to give him kudos for that. Again, I thought that was a big key in that football game, and Stafford stayed away from those mistakes. So they were able to get that field goal to make it 17-10 there. Not too far into the fourth quarter. And then they tied, of course, on the touchdown from Stafford to Cooper Kupp. They even things up, make it 17-17. And then, of course, they're able to get the ball back again. They get down real close again to really, you know, obviously they would love to have had a touchdown on that drive. They had to settle for three, and so we were in the same position that we've been in a lot of these playoff games. Team with the ball, under 2 minutes to go. This time the 49ers didn't have any timeouts. So that, you know, kind of made things a little bit more hectic for the 49ers, but still they only needed a field goal to tie the game. And they could not they basically went backwards on that drive. And, of course, the drive ends up with the Rams getting hellacious pressure on Jimmy G. He sits there. He's in the grasp of three or four Rams, Aaron Donald, and a couple other guys. And as he's going to the ground, he does a little pirouette move or whatever and tries to shovel the pass out to, I guess it was Mitchell. I'm not really sure who the receiver was going to be on that play. Maybe it was Deebo Samuel or whatever, and could not get the ball there. And, of course, the ball was intercepted by the Rams. They get the ball, and they are able to run out the clock at that point, and they are going to be the first team ever to host an NFC championship game and a Super Bowl. And then this is the year after. I mean, we went all those years not having a team basically play in their home stadium. And now we've had it 2 years, or we're going to have it 2 years in a row, as the Rams joined the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as being the only other team to have that happen, which is really kind of crazy. So, man, crazy stuff in that football game as well. But, again, the keys for the Rams, in my opinion, because, you know, really, you look at the two teams, the Rams are the more talented team. They're the better football team. But where the 49ers were able to get them in both of those games in the regular season was their physicality. And the Rams kind of met them with it on Sunday. They really did. And, again, They did not turn the ball over. At least there were no major turnovers that game deciding turnovers anyway. They were able to stay away from those, and the Rams are moving on. And it's a beautiful thing for them, man. It's going to set up a really interesting football game, to say the least, Super Bowl 56. You look at this matchup, Joe Burrow against Matt Stafford. Obviously, we're going to get into a lot deeper into the matchup next week. There are a lot of SEC players playing in this game, even though neither one of those teams are from the South. There are a lot of SEC players that would be having at it on next Sunday at SoFi Stadium. One of those guys, again, is Joe Burrow, man, and he could become only the third quarterback. And I sat there and I was a little bit astounded by this stat. There are only two other quarterbacks that have won a national championship and won a Super Bowl. And those two guys are Joe Namath and Joe Montana. Two Joes. What's Joe Burrow's name? Is that crazy or what? So, yeah, man, that would be an amazing story if Burrow is able to pull this thing out and win a Super Bowl in just his second season as an NFL quarterback. And with that team, man, and you sit there, you start looking at this Bengals team going forward. No matter what happens next Sunday against the Rams, this team is set for a good while. I mean, they really just need to get their offensive line straight. They can, obviously they make some tweaks to their defense, namely their secondary or whatever. But other than that, this team is set for a while. So you might have to get used to the Cincinnati Bengals being in this spot for a long time. We'll see how that works out. Speaking of being set for a long time, the one and only Tom Brady, the GOAT, has decided to finally hang it up. We had the announcement go on Saturday. Adam Schefter put the news out there, and apparently Tom Brady was not ready for him to release that news. He did not want it released like that. He wanted to do it himself. You know what? I'm not mad at him. I'm not mad at Tom for that one, man. I mean, you've had 22 seasons. You've got 7 Super Bowl rings. You got all of the glitz and glamour and everything to go along with it. I don't blame you for wanting to sit there and say, look, man, I want to release it my way. I want to do it my way. I don't blame you. So, again, I thought about how would I talk about him on this show. I'm just not going to really get that deep into it, man. This dude was just a fantastic quarterback. And there are a lot of people that don't like him, and I understand that. I mean, he's not my favorite quarterback either. He's not my favorite guy. Not necessarily because he won 7 Super Bowls. That really didn't bother me necessarily. Obviously, it would have been nice to see some other guys win a couple more, in that time that he has won all 7 of those Super Bowl rings and everything. But, the winning, the 7 rings, all of that stuff doesn't really bother me. It's just the privileges that he's been afforded being a quarterback. And again, look, he's been around that long. You kind of deserve some of those privileges sometimes. But sometimes they were over the top. This league, I think, obviously, when you sit there and look back at that hit, and I put it on Twitter when it happened last week against Tampa Bay, I was like, man, I didn't know what was more surprising, that Tampa Bay, the linebacker, didn't get flagged, that he did not get flagged, or that Tom Brady did, arguing the fact that the Tampa Bay linebacker did not get flagged. I didn't know which was more surprising. Because that was the first time, obviously, we had seen anything like that, a flag for personal foul flag or whatever like that against Tom Brady. It was the first time in his career, 22 seasons, man, 22 seasons, and he gets his first flag of that kind in the last couple quarters. Well, that was in the first half of the game, but still, in the last game of his career. Crazy. But anyway, man, you know, I give all the kudos. I give, you know, this dude is obviously first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. I'm not going to go there that he's one of the best athletes ever, because he's not. Okay, I mean, if you wanted to say he's a great athlete, obviously, because he's playing the game of football. But when I think about athletes, I think about guys that like Bo Jackson, that really do a lot of things. I mean, obviously, Bo Jackson played two sports. I think of guys like Muhammad Ali. I think of guys like Carl Lewis. That is a name that I have not seen a lot. I've seen the name Usain Bolt quite often, but I think Carl Lewis would even be a better athlete than Usain Bolt, because he had he had more Olympic events that he participated in my opinion. And then you look at, you know, guys like Tiger Woods with all his championships. You look at guys like, you know, obviously, I guess a Wayne Gretzky would come to mind. I would put Tom Brady ahead of a guy like that. Don't get me wrong. And then, of course, you have to think about Serena Williams. I mean, you know, the damage that she has done as a tennis player, she obviously has to be at or near the top of any kind of, you know, most athletic list of all time or whatever. So again, he is obviously a top athlete because he's been playing the game of football. But when you sit there and you look at the speed of Bo Jackson and the fact that he played two sports, and even a guy like Deion Sanders to a degree, I'd have to kind of put Tom Brady a little bit behind some of those dudes. But of course, Michael Jordan is another name that I didn't even mention, and really obviously should not have to mention a guy like Michael Jordan in a situation like that. So anyway, man, my hat goes off to Tom Brady. Tom, terrific. TB12, whatever you want to call him, he has had one amazing career. He has definitely given us a lot of thrills. He's given a lot of people a lot of heartache. He's pissed off a lot of people along the way, but well-deserved retirement for him as he goes off into the sunset. I wonder what the odds are, though, that he may kind of sit at the house for a little while and say, you know what, man, I need to get back on the field. What are the odds that he does to Brett Favre? I don't know. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. But, again, congrats to Tom Brady on those 22 seasons as an NFL quarterback. Anyway, man, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk some college sports, man. We're going to go around the SEC. We're going to do that when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're going to get back into some more Ball About the South with C. Wood. I am C. Wood, your host. Again, follow me at C. Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG. Man, and we're going to kind of get toward the end of this particular episode 20. We're going to start with my SEC, around the SEC segment. Again, a lot going on, man. We have, obviously, the hardwood is, you know, basketball is really getting hot in the SEC. When you sit there and you look at the calendar, we have changed over into February. And yeah, we, you know, obviously right now the league is owned right now by Auburn. You know, Auburn is really threatening to run away and hide with this whole thing. You know, Kentucky's trying to kind of hang in there, but they're, of course, they're a game down to them, regardless of what the record is, because they lost to them already. They've already lost the game to Auburn, so Kentucky's kind of in catch-up mode. You got a lot of other teams in catch-up mode. Texas A&M has started to kind of hit a bit of a wall after their fast start. Kind of knew that would happen. Wasn't really a huge believer that A&M was going to be able to keep up the pace that they had coming, you know, early in the season, early in the conference season and everything. They won their first four or five games and everything. So now they've cooled off a lot, and probably right now, besides Kentucky, the team to watch in the SEC right now is probably the Arkansas Razorbacks. And the Hogs, they have done their thing. They got off to a really slow start, which was definitely not expected. Again, this is a team that lost quite a bit from last season's team. There's no question about it. You think about guys like Moses Moody that have moved on to the NBA or G League and everything, but also Daniel Gafford. But you sit there and you look at this team, man, you think that really, they were a top 10 team at one point. Just like Alabama, they were a top 10 team, and now they're not ranked at all. And it's a little bit of a surprise. It really is. But you sit there and you look at this team right now, and they're 6-3, right behind Kentucky, a game behind. Tennessee is at 6-3. The Kentucky Wildcats, Mississippi State trying to hang in there as well at 5-3. And there's Auburn there at the top with that two-game lead over the Kentucky Wildcats. Auburn Tigers are 9-0, and the Wildcats are 7-2. So, again, man, it's a critical time for a team like Kentucky if they want to win the league. But then again, when you sit there and really look at it, I mean, it's not really a big deal, which is really the bad thing about college basketball. Winning the league's regular season really isn't that big a deal. It's a good thing if you can do it. Don't get me wrong, especially, you sit there and you look at a team like Alabama that had not won the league in a long time. For them to do it last season, that was huge. It really was. But when you sit there and look at it in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about trying to win a national championship or something like that, it's really not that big a deal. And that's one of the knocks on college basketball. The regular season doesn't really mean much, or it doesn't mean enough anyway. So, again, Auburn, they have set themselves apart big time. 9-0 in the league, 21-1 overall. And they're coming off of that huge win against Alabama on Tuesday night. They won that game. They put a bill on the tie. They win that game 100-81. And again, there's not much else you can say about Auburn. This team right now is just set to do whatever they want to do. They can go as far as they want to go. It's just that simple. I mean, obviously, matchups kind of matter once you get into the big dance, but this is a team that can play, I think, a lot of different styles. And that's the good part about this about this basketball team. You think about if you're playing a team that wants to play big, there's not a team that's going to overwhelm this Auburn team with a guy like Walker Kessler on the interior. This dude is something. He really is. Big 7-footer. They got him from North Carolina out of the transfer portal. This dude, man, I'm telling you, we knew that he probably would be pretty good. But I don't think, some Auburn fans may tell you, oh, yeah, we expected this. Yeah, we knew exactly what we were getting. No, they didn't. They didn't expect this Walker Kessler. I'm telling you right now, they didn't. That dude changed. He completely changed that Alabama game on Tuesday night by himself, in my opinion. Because I think, in a lot of ways, I thought Alabama had a pretty good plan of what they wanted to do against Auburn, and trying to drive the ball against him is just—I'm not gonna say it's impossible, but you got to be really crafty. You got to have some things really working well, and Alabama did not. They were trying to get the ball down inside, and this dude was rejecting everything that was coming his way. The big thing, the big differences in the first game and the second game, between the first game and the second game between Alabama and Auburn, they were able to get Kessler in foul trouble. They were able to get him out of the game early with a couple of fouls, and then he actually ended up fouling out of the game in the second half. And Alabama was able to do some of the things that they like to do as far as driving the ball to the rim again, Alabama basically likes to shoot threes and layups, kind of like the Houston Rockets used to like to do it. So it was a lot easier to do it without Kessler in the lineup. With Kessler in there, it was pretty difficult. And Alabama struggled from the field. They struggled shooting the ball all around, especially from three. No one really got anything going early in that game except for Jaden Shackelford. He was on point shooting the ball from distance. But, again, when you're sitting there talking about a team like Auburn, this team has Kessler. They've got probably the number one pick overall in the upcoming NBA draft in Jabari Smith. They've got this dude Green coming off the bench. They've got some other players to go with those guys, Cambridge and – I mean, the list is too long to even say. I mean, Bruce Pearl's bench is deep, deep, deep. One of the deepest in the country. There's no question about that. And once you put all of that together, man, Alabama just didn't have a shot the other night. They just really didn't. And this Auburn team is going to be a nightmare to deal with as we get close to March. Speaking of the Crimson Tide, again, that was a huge loss. They did get the win over Baylor, which was really huge. They had to have that game, in my opinion. That got them to 14-7, and now they're 14-8 with the loss to Auburn. Only 4-5 in the league. Not a good record there. But you look at that game Saturday, the thing that kind of worried me, as well as they played, Baylor is not quite the same Baylor that they were a few weeks ago. They've got some injuries, especially in their backcourt. And, you know, Alabama, you know, despite their struggles at times and everything, the one thing that I don't think anybody's going to dispute is the talent of Javon Quinterly and Jaden Shackelford and Keon Ellis, one of the best guard lineups in the country. And a lot of people think they are the best. They're not necessarily playing like it on a consistent basis, but in a lot of ways, a lot of people think this is the best guard lineup in the country. So when you're sitting there talking about Baylor being without a couple of their guys, obviously that's going to put them at a disadvantage. And, you know, we saw Alabama really, their offense clicked a lot better than we've seen it in the last few weeks. And you just have to sit there and think in the back of your mind, was that the reason? Because Baylor was not whole. This is not the Baylor that we've seen, that we saw go undefeated up until a couple of weeks ago. And this is probably not the Baylor that we're going to see going forward here as they try to defend their national title from last season. So, you know, this Alabama team, man, I think it's not panic time yet if you're an Alabama fan. If you're an Alabama player, coaching staff, whatever, especially, obviously, if you're not a player or coach or whatever, this is obviously no time to panic. This team is still set to go to the NCAA tournament, all those good things. But when you sit there and you look at, a lot of people want to sit there and bring up, okay, how did this team beat Gonzaga? How did they beat Houston? Two teams that went to the Final Four last year. And now, how did they beat Baylor? How have they beaten three of the Final Four teams from last season, but yet they lose to Georgia, they lose to Missouri, they get blown out the other night by Auburn. What's the difference? And I think, man, you know, I'm really, you know, this thought process that I've had for a while is I think that this is not enough diversity with this offense. And I think that a lot of SEC teams, again, you're talking about teams that are going to see you multiple times a year. They have gotten used to seeing what this Nate Oates offense is going to do. They know that they're basically going to take threes and layups. So if they can have a guy kind of take away, especially if you've got a team like Auburn that can take away the rim, that can, you know, that can protect the rim like Kessler can, and they were just kind of hanging him back. They went to a zone, as a matter of fact, 2-3 zone there in the second half after Alabama made a run. Alabama had gotten down by 18 in the first half, cut the lead to 2 early in the second half, and then Bruce Pearl said, okay, I've seen enough. We're going to go into this 2-3 zone. And Alabama never threatened again. And that's what I'm talking about. These coaches in the SEC know how to defend this offense. If they have the personnel, they can kind of get it done. And so a team like Baylor, even though, yes, Scott Drew, the head coach of the Baylor Bears, he's got film, obviously. I mean, he can look at plenty of film, but he hasn't coached against Alabama. So you just wonder, you know, Mark Few, head coach of the Gonzaga Bulldogs. A lot of film, but it's kind of a little bit different than having film against a team and then actually playing them. So you just have to wonder that maybe those teams really didn't know how to defend them, how to play against Alabama. A lot of teams were trying to slow them down. Gonzaga tried to run with them, which is, you know. So I don't know. That's just my take on this thing. I think that a lot of teams have gotten used to what Nate Oates is doing with his offense, and I think there's got to be some adjustments. I think that's what we need to see. I'm not really sure where that comes. The biggest thing I've been able to come up with is playing some four-guard lineups. Now, we've seen a little bit of that, but I think maybe we need to see it a little bit more prominently to have these teams play like Alabama wants them to play and not Alabama trying to play like they want them to play. Because we saw it in the Baylor game. Baylor has two bigs that did not play a lot in the second half against Alabama because Scott Drew was trying to match up with what Alabama was doing with their small lineup. But then again, Alabama in the game on Tuesday night against Auburn could not match up with Auburn on the interior. So, you know, and that's even though Charles Bediako, I've called him out. He had a really good second half in that game. He had a bad first half, but he really came on in the second half. He had, I think, four or five block shots. Didn't score a whole lot, but he played a lot better. That is the kind of presence that Alabama's going to need going forward from him. If he could give him a little bit more offense, that could be really huge. But, you know, one of the things Alabama's missing, man, is that big that can step out and shoot the jumper from 15 to 20 feet or whatever, even out the three-point range like they had with Alex Reese and Jordan Bruner and some other guys like that. Alabama's missing that element with this team, and this team needs spacing. That is the key to this ball club right now. And, you know, again, they are just not playing at their best right now. We'll see if they can get it going because they've got the Kentucky Wildcats coming in on Saturday afternoon coming to Tuscaloosa. That is going to be a huge game. The Wildcats are ranked number 5 in the country. Again, that is a pretty big game for Alabama to try to pull out. And that's not going to be easy because, again, the Wildcats sitting at 7-2 in the league. They're looking, they blew out Kansas on Saturday in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. I mean, they wiped the floor with the Jayhawks last week. The SEC went 6-4 in the SEC Big East Challenge, Big 12 Challenge, excuse me. You had Auburn win. You had Arkansas win their game. You had Ole Miss win their game. You had, of course, Alabama and Auburn win their two games. Auburn beat the Oklahoma Sooners, and then Kentucky wins their at Fog Allen Fieldhouse against the Jayhawks. So a really good weekend for the SEC, but now we get ready to get back in the conference play again. Again, like I said, that is a huge matchup between Kentucky and Alabama on Saturday evening. Ty Washington is back for the Kentucky Wildcats. I think that is huge for their backcourt to go with Sevier Wheeler and all of the guys that they have that Calipari can kind of go with in his arsenal there for the Wildcats. So, again, that should be a really good basketball game. Okay, so, again, as we continue around the SEC, there was a lot more going on than just basketball. We had National Signing Day, which was huge for the Texas A&M Aggies. They come out, and I'm not really sure if it was consensus. I think it probably was across all the platforms or recruiting services or whatever. 247 Sports, Rivals, ESPN, all of those. But, man, they come out on top. They have the number one recruiting class, and right behind them in maybe not in a certain order or whatever, Georgia and Alabama. I think maybe there are a couple services that may have Georgia number two and Bama three, and then there are a couple that have it vice versa, Alabama two and Georgia three. But for the most part, the A&M Aggies have won the recruiting battle, which is huge. I mean, it just is. I mean, that is a really good thing. But the question that I have, and I think the question that a lot of people are going to have, is what can Jimbo Fisher do with it? And this is a guy that is coming off a season where, again, I've alluded to this on the show a couple times before, they lost four games this past season, and not one of those games was to Alabama. So that's not good. And again, if you know how I feel about Jimbo Fisher, I think he's a really good coach, don't get me wrong, but this guy, I think, is kind of he's failed in some big games. Let's just be real about it. And that just didn't start at A&M. I think that goes back to Florida State. So, you know, again, we'll see how it goes, but they have the number one recruiting class. There are some allegations out there against him, though, started by guys like Lane Kiffin, that this NIL deal has a lot to do with that. And there was some wrongdoing on the part of the Aggies. Of course, Jimbo Fisher pushed back against that. So, you know, it's going to be this. I think we're going to talk about a lot of heat going on. Once we get into the fall, man, we talk about some of these matchups. Again, Lane Kiffin accusing Jimbo Fisher of wrongdoing in recruiting with the NIL thing and everything. That is going to be crazy to watch as we get closer to football season, man. I'm here to tell you, and I'm here all for it. I'm here to tell you right now. I'm here, and we're going to bring every bit of it to you that we can here on Ball About the South. So stay tuned with us right here, because we're going, obviously, we come at you with the SEC as much as we possibly can, and we have a good time doing it. Furthermore, there, we look at, we're going down as I kind of continue my around the SEC segment and kind of close it out. The news not so good in Auburn, Alabama. The planes are hot right now. Brian Harsin, there are allegations against him that are coming out that there's some, you know, mistreatment of players. There are some players that are coming out on social media and everything saying that he was really hard on them. I'm starting to hear some things saying that he was maybe harder on the African-American players that were on the team. I don't know how true all of that is. I'm not going to sit there and make any kind of judgment or any kind of determination on any of that. So, I mean, I'm not going to get into any of that. I'm just going to tell you what the news is out there. You know, that's all I'm going to really do. I don't have any clue of what's going on as far as anything like that. But it is a red flag when you think about guys leaving the program the way that they have, and especially when you talk about Bo Nix. Bo Nix leaving the program to go to Oregon. I don't know if there's a big enough red flag for that one. There's something going on there at Auburn, because, I mean, Bo Nix, this is a guy that grew up an Auburn fan. His dad played quarterback for Auburn. I'm not saying that, look, you know, I'm not saying that guys are not going to go out, not going to want to go out and trail their own path to success or whatever. I'm not saying anything like that, and definitely not anything wrong with him wanting to do that. So maybe everything is the look. He just wanted new scenery. He found out, he felt like there was a better opportunity for him elsewhere. Maybe it is. And so I'm not saying that it isn't, but it's still pretty odd that this guy was going to be more than likely the starting quarterback coming back next season, and he decided to move on. So, you know, again, I'm not going to sit here and make any accusations of my own or anything like that. I have no clue, but I'm just telling you guys what's out there right now. So you had that going on already, and then just a few hours ago, you have the allegations of there being an affair, an extramarital affair by Brian Harsin with, I'm not sure if it's an intern or someone that works in the office or whatever, but somewhere in there in the athletic office that Brian Harsin is supposedly having an affair with, which is obviously not a good situation. So I'm not really sure how that's going to turn out. I have no clue if it's true or not. Brian Harsin has come out. I think there was a statement saying he basically called it a bunch of BS. He would not do anything like that or whatever. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm basically paraphrasing. The only thing you need to know is he's calling it a bunch of BS. And he used those exact words. He used the exact full words. He didn't come out and say it was a bunch of just BS. He said it was a bunch of bull-ish. So he's denying it, obviously. So I'm not sure if it's true or not, but there's a chance that Brian Harsin, with all of this going down, there's a chance that he may not be the head coach of the Auburn Tigers much longer. Not really sure how it's going to work out, man. I was, you know, again, look, I thought the Harsin hire was questionable anyway. I didn't think that he was not a good coach or whatever. But it's just the fact of him coming from where he was in Boise and coming down here to the SEC and everything. And then once he got here, just some things that, I don't know, you just kind of get a feeling about. And you sit there and kind of look at some of the things on the field that you're seeing from the team and all of that. I've never really felt that hire at all. And the only thing that I hate about it, though, is, again, this is going to come back on Alan Green. And Alan Green is the athletic director there at Auburn. And if you're not familiar with him, he's a brother. He is an African-American, and I love the fact that he has that job because, again, we just got done talking about jobs, you know, head coaches not having jobs in the NFL. Only one black coach in the NFL, that's Mike Tomlin with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am glad to see that we do have a couple of new GMs with the Vikings and the Bears over the last couple of weeks, but one black head coach still. So you get the importance of having an athletic director in the SEC that's black. I mean, that's huge, man. And I applauded Auburn for that. And I'm an Alabama fan. But I applaud Auburn big time. I don't have necessarily anything against Auburn unless the University of Alabama is playing against them. I don't have anything against Auburn. So, and I think this was a hell of a move for them to hire this guy. And they're saying, you know, and so my immediate thoughts went to him. How is he going to be looked at with all this going down? Because, look, when you're an athletic director, especially at a university in the SEC, your job, your number one job, or the number one thing you're critiqued on most is your football hire. And if he's the guy, I'm seeing in everything that I've looked back at, because I actually went back to when Harsin was hired, and I've looked at some reports here this evening, and everyone is saying that this was his hire. Excuse me. They're saying that this was his guy. I mean, Brian Harsin was his guy. So I'm not really, you know, again, I'm not really sure because there's a lot of things going on at Auburn, man. There's, you know, there's a lot of talk about how much control the boosters have down there. There's a real tug of war for control going down there in Auburn and everything. So, you know, my thought process is like, look, okay, maybe Okay, yeah, we're seeing on the surface, okay, yeah, Allen Green, this was Allen Green's hire, but was it really Allen Green's hire when it comes down to it? So everything I've seen so far is saying yes. So, I don't know. I kind of have some mixed feelings about this whole situation with that being the case. So we'll see how it works out, man. And, again, I think there was supposed to be a huge board meeting today at Auburn, or tomorrow at Auburn, rather. And we could know something by the end of the weekend. Also going on at that board meeting at Auburn is Bruce Pearl's contract. He has a contract for life that he signed just last week. So that is huge for him. Obviously, for whatever reason, I don't know why they're calling it for life, because the contract is only for 8 years. I think it's like $52 million or something. He's supposed to be making like $5.4 million a year, somewhere in that range. And that keeps teams like Louisville at bay, because there was a lot of chatter out there that the Louisville Cardinals were coming after Bruce Pearl after they fired Chris Mack. That was, you know, I'm really surprised to see that go down the way it went down there at Louisville. I thought Chris Mack would be a success there at Louisville, but obviously that was far from the case. So, I don't know, man. Crazy. Crazy stuff going on there. I'm going to hit you up with a couple HBCU notes before we get out of here. The SWAC, you know, we're going to get into some of the HBCU Combine and kind of get you ready for the NFL draft that's coming up with some of the HBCU guys that are coming out to have a really good shot at hopefully getting into the NFL. And again, that's another narrative going against the NFL. Zero HBCU guys went into the draft last season. Hopefully we're going to change that. Hopefully this Combine is going to be instrumental in doing that went down this past weekend. We'll talk about some of that. You know, guys like Akil Glass from Alabama A&M, a quarterback that we've talked about quite a lot, took part in that combine last weekend. So we're wishing him and all of those other guys a lot of luck as they try to fulfill their dreams of playing in the NFL. There was a bit of other news that came out. The Jackson State Tigers are pulling out of the Southern Heritage Classic there in Memphis, Tennessee. And it kind of took me, man, because I was looking. It was announced a week or so ago that Jackson State would be playing three classics here in Birmingham. And if you aren't familiar with me and this podcast, I am sitting here in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm in the heart of SEC country, but I'm also in the heart of SWAC country, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, right here in the middle, smack dab in the middle of two huge HBCUs, the Alabama A&M Bulldogs to the north in Huntsville, the Alabama State Hornets to the south in Montgomery. We've got the Tuskegee Tigers to the east of there. So a lot of HBCUs here in this state. And I'm right here in the middle of all of that. And I'm sitting there seeing the news of Jackson State coming to play three classics. Two of those games are going to be against Southern. That's going to be huge for this city, man. So we're going to have three black classics, three HBCU classics for the next three seasons. The Magic City Classic, then we'll have the Tuskegee Morehouse game, which is going to be here for the next several years or whatever. And then now we're going to have this new Birmingham Classic. I'm not sure what it's going to be called yet, but Jackson State is going to play in it the next three seasons. Well, for that reason, they pulled out of the Southern Heritage Classic against Tennessee State. And it's really odd, man. I'm really not understanding that, because that has always been one of the top classics in HBCU football. Tennessee State, a member of the Ohio Valley Conference. Jackson State, a member of the SWAC, and everything they have going on with Coach Prime and all of that going on. It has really been a huge game. And for whatever reason, Jackson State has decided to pull out. I'm not really understanding that one. And they really didn't give, at least according to officials there at Tennessee State, and I got this from HBCU Game Day. There's a really good website, really good platform. They do a lot of HBCU content. If you're unfamiliar with them, I got it from their website that Jackson State never really contacted Tennessee State at all. And it was kind of a breach of contract because they had three more seasons that they were supposed to have played this Southern Heritage Classic. So it's really surprising, man. I'm happy to see it for the city of Birmingham to have some high caliber football coming back in, you know, Jackson State and Southern and all of that. The other game, two seasons, is going to be Jackson State and Southern. The third season, which I think is the first season, which will be next year, 2023, is going to be Arkansas Pine Bluff. So I'm excited about all of that, but I'm really sitting there questioning what's going on with why Jackson State decided to breach that contract. Kind of interesting, to say the least. So we'll see how that goes. And again, I wish all of my HBCU guys a lot of luck and a lot of blessings, man, as they get ready to head toward the NFL draft. And I also want to say, while I'm speaking on HBCUs, I definitely want to say Happy Black History Month. Got my tongue tied there. Happy Black History Month to everyone out there. It did not get off to a good start. We had a lot of HBCUs have bomb threats this past week. I'm not sure what's up with that. Hopefully we're going to do something to get to the bottom of it. I have my suspicions of what's going on with that, but I'm not going to sit here and go into that or whatever. I'm not going to sit here and speculate, but whatever the case is in that, man, we can't have our kids be scared to go to school. So they've got to get to the nitty-gritty of that really quick and keep those kids safe there on the campuses of our HBCUs. Quickly, again, I mentioned the Atlanta Hawks. As we talked just a little bit in the NBA, I've not gotten into much NBA here lately, but trust and believe we're going to get into a lot of it as we get closer to the end of the season and everything. The All-Star game will be coming up here in a couple of weeks and all of that. So we're going to get into a lot of NBA going forward. The Atlanta Hawks are starting to make some noise. They have won 8 of their last 9 games. I talked about them on the intro. Trae Young is coming along the way he should be. They are finally looking to be pretty healthy. They've gotten Kevin Huerter back. John Collins is playing well. So this team is looking pretty good. We're wondering how far they can go. Is it too late for them? Right now they're 24-26 on the season. They're kind of down in the standings. At this point, they would not be in the play-in tournament, but again, they've got enough time, plenty of time to make that up. How far can this team go? If they continue on the path that they're on, can they get it back where they can make a similar run to what they did last season? They beat Phoenix last night in pretty convincing fashion. Had a really good game from Trae Young. He put down 43 last night. Interesting basketball team, to say the least. And I'm really, really interested to see how they're going to fare, man. Because, you know, again, we saw it last season. They got off to that slow start last year, and then they got it on. And when they got hot, it was really only the Greek Freak and the Milwaukee Bucks that were able to stop it. So we'll see how that goes going forward for the Atlanta Hawks. And, again, we're going to keep you up to date with all the NBA as we go forward and get toward the playoffs. The Grizzlies continue to do their thing. Ja Morant, he is going to be starting the All-Star game. That is going to be a good thing to see. This dude is hella fun to watch. So, again, we're going to get into a lot more NBA as we go forward. Anyway, y'all, man, it's been another good show. I think that's about all I have for you right now. Again, we're going to keep up with the hoops going on this weekend. We're going to keep up with the Brian Harsin situation there in Auburn. And of course, we're going to get ready for Super Bowl 56 next week. And we're going to keep going with everything that's going on in the NFL with the Brian Flores situation. And we'll be right back here next week, man, talking about it on Ball About the South. Again, my name is Kerry Wood, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG. Hit me up on there. Let's chop up some sports. Like, subscribe, all of those good things. Comment on the show, Ball About the South. I really would appreciate it. Until next time, man, I'm out. Y'all be safe. I'll holler at you next week.